Good morning and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number on the line. As promised, my good friend and attorney and former alderman of the city of Milwaukee, who now resides in sunny Charlotte, North Carolina, Fred Gordon is on the line. Hey, good morning, brother. How you doing?
Brother Earl. I'm well, brother. I'm swelligant. That's a new word for me. It means I'm swell and elegant simultaneously.
Man, I'm trying to comprehend all of that. But
brother, there's always a lot to comprehend in this life.
Yeah.
You know that.
Well, so let me.
But it's good to be with you on a Wednesday morning.
And Fred, here's where I want to begin. You remember the Flint water crisis, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's still a crisis.
Yeah.
It hasn't gone away.
So they've gone to court. The Michigan Supreme Court deemed the indictments against ex-governor Rick Snyder and eight others invalid. So here's why they said they were invalid. The state's charges against former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder and eight others in the Flint water contamination scandal have been dropped by the state Supreme Court. State laws merely authorize a judge to investigate, subpoena witnesses, and issue arrest warrants, but do not authorize the judge to issue indictments. The court's 6-0 opinion reads, Attorney General Dana Nessel took office in 2019 and assembled a new team to investigate Snyder and a slew of individuals and officials who were in charge when Flint's water supply became contaminated with lead beginning 5 years earlier. An outbreak of Legionnaire's disease in 2014 and 2015 was attributed to issues with the city's water as well. Now, here's what, if you can help, explain this to us. Their alleged crimes included, among others, misconduct in office, willful neglect of duty, and involuntary manslaughter. The Genesee County Judge David Neubelt reviewed the evidence and issued indictments as so-called one-man grand jury, Tuesday's opinion argues. Neubelt considered the evidence behind closed doors and then issued indictments against defendants. The opinion states, noting that unlike a grand jury made up of citizens, a one-man grand jury, that is, a judge, do not require a jury oath and thus cannot initiate charges by issuing indictments. So, you're a lawyer. And we don't expect the average citizen, we don't understand the legalese of law. But you don't need
only,
to be
only
a,
if you've been in court.
Okay, so Fred, they wipe all of that away with something that says a one-man jury, that is a judge, do not require a jury oath and thus cannot initiate charges by issuing indictment. So people have died. People have been aggrieved for their entire lives, and they get to walk away.
Well, not only do they get to walk away, Earl, it's important to understand that America is in the midst of a cascading spiral going downward, and it affects all levels of life in this country. The legal system is under fire. The criminal justice system is deteriorating. Even in civil matters, such as the lawsuit that was filed on behalf of the citizens of Flint, Michigan. The fact that you came up with this is interesting because we've already gone beyond Flint. We're dealing with what's going on in the city of Milwaukee, for example, with the lead buildup and the controversies with the health department at the city of Milwaukee.
Right.
And, you know, issues involving water. There was a real interesting segment that I just recently saw about the politics of water in America. And, you know, this is an example of it. Michigan is a real interesting state in that people who have aligned themselves with the conservative right have been able to control the state houses, similar to what's happening in Wisconsin. And the judiciary, obviously, is run amok. I've never heard of a one-man grand jury. Never heard of it. You know, so as a result, this is totally news to me from the standpoint that you just read. But it's real clear that it's endemic, at least to me, it's endemic of what's happening in America generally. There are no more bulwarks that can be aligned with because you've got prosecutors with power, you've got judges with power, and think about this, Earl. They tried to assassinate the governor of Michigan.
Yeah.
They were charged. They were acquitted. Think about that. They were going to, every one of those co-conspirators was acquitted, which stunned me. And these were all capital offenses. So Michigan is different. It's a lot more different than Detroit, believe me. And, you know, the fact that this is happening in Flint is just endemic of what I see as the erosion of law and the escalation of right white wing power in America.
You know, Fred, you just hit upon something that all of us know is at the root of all of the things that are now happening in this country. And the fact that we know what's at the root of it is right-wing power, basically stemming from the fact that there are white men who want things to go back to what they were, not just Donald Trump, but many. And you know what, Fred? They're winning. That's the real danger. Inherent danger in this.
Very scary, man. These times are very scary, Earl. I just find that coming out of this pandemic, and you know, I did some traveling recently, you know, to see my grandchildren in Nevada and my son for Father's Day weekend. Just looking at, you know, the landscape, we're trying to assess it, because coming out of the pandemic, you know, we had to deal with that, and that seems to have subsided to some degree. So there's a safety factor as far as moving around and not wearing masks and just reorienting ourselves to some degree of normalcy. But, you know, the fissures that are tearing this country apart are getting wider and wider. And, you know, the extremes are starting to become everyday occurrences that all you can do is just blink and keep moving. It's really, really treacherous out here in America, and it's affecting every system that we have right now.
You know, Fred, you and I are going to talk about a lot of those different things that are happening in this country and that people had better add them up and then realize what's at stake. We talk about the great nation and all of those things, Fred. And when you add all the things up that are happening, you and I have been around a while. This is one of the most dangerous times in your and my lifetime.
And, without a doubt. Absolutely.
And we lived through some things already. You know, you would think that what happened in 1968, Fred, we knew 1968 is historic. All of those things that happen, and you add all of those things up, and they don't even compare with what is taking place now. And you got grandchildren.
Grandchildren. It's really important to have these kinds of conversations because as we look at what's happening, you know, politically, and how that's going to affect just the next couple of years, and what's at stake here. There's just so much to fathom. And, you know, I'm still processing, you know, the testimony of the aide at the
I was getting ready to go, Fred, you know, because there are all these different things. And the other day I put down a list of all of the critical things that are happening right now. And you can't focus solely on one thing because there's so many different things going on. And you know what, Fred? Our government seems to be feckless. It can't fix these things. So because of the divide, you know, between and the politics of all of it. And you're a retired politician. Fred, how come we can't get... So I know, but how come we can't even, you know, there was a time even when there were disagreements politically on a national scale and others, but even they could come together and say, hey, you know, we've got to do what's in the best interest of this nation. That's not there anymore, and I don't know if you can ever bring that back.
Well, it's there in extremes, Earl. It's there in extremes. We see it on the left. We see it on the right. We talk about whether or not there even exists a middle to deal with. I don't think that there is anymore. And we have to also talk about the class divisions that take place and have taken place. They're becoming more and more pronounced. You know, we just had the overturning of
Roe v. Wade. Fred, hold the thought. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. On the line, attorney Fred Gordon, former alderman of the city of Milwaukee. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number on the line. My good friend, former Alderman Fred Gordon, former Alderman for the city of Milwaukee, who now resides in sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Fred, I was saying, you and I remember well when Ronald Reagan came upon the scene. And we thought that Ronald Reagan was a dangerous guy, right? I mean, when he first came on the scene, we really feared Ronald Reagan and some of the things that he was talking about doing. But fast forward that to where we are now, Fred. I mean, you know, you talked about even when Ronald Reagan was around, there was some center, right? I mean, there was some opportunity that people worked their way through things. But there is.
Well, the thing about Reaganism is that it permeated the white population of America. And because he was a good actor, not a great actor, but a good actor. That was his greatest role. And we realized the people around him were devious and dangerous. We certainly understood that. But generally, things went away and that changed.
Right.
Now we have someone, it's like the Twilight Zone, Earl. You have these characters and things are playing. I was watching the hearing because I haven't been paying much attention to the Jan 6 hearings, because I just think that nothing's going to come of it. It's great for, you know, the revenues for the television stations and the internet and all of that. But this is not going to end up, in my view, the way that Watergate ended up with Nixon resigning. See, I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think Donald Trump is going to jail?
I'll be stunned.
You don't think Donald Trump is?
No, man. I don't think he's going to jail. I don't think they're going to indict him. I have absolutely zero confidence in Merrick Garland's ability, you know, to seize the time and to realize that this is what, if this guy had any kind of resolve, because every time I see him, he looks like he's about to break down and cry. So I have no confidence in him. So for me, you know, I watched the hearing yesterday for the first time. And, you know, I'll give kudos to Chairman Thompson. I think he's doing a great job. And, you know, I've sat in committee hearings. You sat in committee hearings. We know how ponderous and boring they can be. And, you know, this woman came forth yesterday risking her life, essentially, as she knows it, because she was part of it. So what happens to her? She's going to be, as she's young, she can recover. You know, she'll find a way. But to the extent that I want to hear more now. I want to hear from, you know, the people who were there. Because they're all lying.
So, Fred.
They're all lying to protect themselves.
So, Fred, I've said this. The most powerful nation on earth militarily and financially. And yet they're talking about, they've heard about threats on this young lady's life, on her life. It's hard for me to buy that, man, that they can't know where the threats are coming from and deal with it.
No, they know where the threats are coming from.
So why don't they deal with it?
They just don't want to. They don't want to give credence to whoever's making the threats. Because, you know, in these days and times, anybody can make a threat,
right?
And you can find out who it is very, very quickly. Now, whether you're going to expose that to more than you need to is based on what you feel, I think. But no, the threats come with the territory. She knew what she was doing. And I'm sure she's smart enough to have some degree of protection. I don't know what it is, but I suspect that she will. I mean, they made her a star for better or for worse. But do I think it's going to tip the scale? I just want to hear from people who were also there, because she wasn't a player. You know, she wasn't a player at all. And, you know, you didn't get a chance to ask her any questions.
You know,
basically, she said what she heard somebody say.
Right.
You know,
which
so to that extent, I want to hear more, because my assumption, Earl, is that these hearings are going to go on for some time. There's been no indication as to when they're going to conclude and what, in fact, is going to happen. So all the pundits and profiteers are going to speculate on what it's going on.
So, Fred, being an attorney, we don't know, the average layman. When you say she's talking about what she heard, in a court of law, hearsay, I mean, you know, even though all those things sound, you know, tantalizing, and we all say, oh, see, she said it, they got Trump. In a court of law, that doesn't have any merit, right?
Well, no, it doesn't. And I think most people understand that, because, you know, if you've been around long enough and you've seen or been a part of the legal system in this country, you've had some access to it in terms of understanding basic premises. And, you know, if you're a political animal like we are and you follow these things, you know that, you know, this is a great theater presentation. And I like drama. I'm a big fan of drama. So if it's good drama, I'll watch it. I found her testimony compelling. And I think that it just makes me now want to watch more performances, because it's theater.
You know, Fred,
I think it's theater of the absurd in many respects.
You know what? Many of us who look at that and say, look, they're finally going to get Donald Trump, and we don't look at it as theater. We look at it as it's the truth, and finally there's going to be some justice. But you put it back in perspective. It no matter how.
But Earl, I don't think anybody really believes that this is going to be the gotcha moment in Trump's political life. I don't believe that most folk believe that. I think people clearly understand that, you know, this is all for show. This is all based on politics that most people can't stand. You know, people are tired of politics. They're tired of the gamesmanship. They're tired of the lies. And certainly Trump has contributed to that, no question. But I think people generally are sick of politics right now.
Yeah.
And that opens the door for Trumpers and other power players who can seize opportunities like this. That's why government is no longer, like you talked about Reagan. What did Reagan, what was his quote? Government isn't,
government isn't the answer. It's the problem or something like that.
And that's come to pass.
You know, Fred, I think all of us who've been around a while have had enough, seen enough things in our lives that we don't trust government totally. But to hear it from the perspective of Republicans, government is only good when they get what they want from it. And yet, Fred, we got to go to break. We'll be right back. On the line,
all right.
Attorney Fred Gordon and, former alderman from the city of Milwaukee who now resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to touch on a lot of different things. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, Attorney Fred Gordon. You know, Fred, I was talking about all of these different things. Let's take gas prices. Now, I don't know what
let's
it is.
And make them lower.
Huh?
I said, let's take them and make them lower.
Republicans are blaming Joe Biden. And that's the politics of it, right? I mean, that's how this thing works. It didn't matter who would have been in office, what has happened right now with those oil prices. Has happened before. It's not like we didn't know the oil embargo many years ago that took place. We kind of saw this when you and I were much younger. And so it happens from time to time. And it just so happens that it happened while Joe Biden's in office. He's being blamed for all of it. And it is going to have some political fallout. I don't know what it is down there, man, but it's still somewhere around, on average about $4.70, $4.80 here. And it is having a major effect on. Huh?
I was in Vegas last week, man, and gas prices there have soared to between $6 and $7.
So, Fred.
I'm acutely aware. In fact, here in North Carolina, things are somewhat stable at this point. It's been that way for a few weeks now. But by the end of the summer, I'm sure we'll be competing with Nevada and other states who are paying $7 to $8 a gallon.
Fred, that's...
And you're right. Biden is being blamed for it because you always blame the big guy. And it's easy to do that.
Fred,
but we understand that. Go ahead.
Here's the point I'm trying to make. It's unsustainable. You know, there are some people who are fortunate in this society that, $7 for a gallon of gas, they'll just grin and bear it. But others,
we all do.
Their lives are devastated, Fred. You know, people who live on the margin and they can't, they're barely making it. This destroys the life that they have. They're trying to make it. They're trying to, you know, and they live on.
Let me pose this to you. I agree with the tenor of what you're saying, but then you have to also understand the class distinctions thereof.
Right.
For example, in the people you just described to me are homeless people, and homeless people are catching hell in America. They don't have any of those things. They don't have cars.
Right.
And in major metropolitan areas, you know, the homeless population is growing by leaps and bounds. So, yeah, those folk are suffering as a result of this, to be sure. But in effect, they don't have homes. And then you go to the next level, and then the next level, and then the next level. So, you know, there are levels of existence at this stage that we have to really focus on. Unfortunately, for the homeless, that is not the tenor of what's happening as far as the focus is concerned. That's why the races in San Francisco and Los Angeles, the cities that are really impacted, just watching the way that they're dealing with the homeless population is exploding. So that's the population that doesn't have that. They don't have gas. They don't have vehicles. They don't have hope. How do we instill hope in the homeless?
You know, Fred, I'm talking about a population that are, you know, maybe they're making $30,000 a year, which is a poverty line for a family of three to four. They have a vehicle. Yeah. That is not exactly the best vehicle that there is, but it gives them an opportunity to keep moving and keep trying to be a part of this society. And, you know, I've driven beaters before. I know that there are people who are like that, who are just trying to make it, man. And it gives them an opportunity to get to work and to pick their children up and to go to the grocery store. And the price of gas for them, because they don't have gas efficient cars, they're not homeless, but they are struggling.
Right.
And the impact that's.
Yeah,
you know, but Fred, this is not going away anytime soon. The midterms are coming up. Let's deal with inflation, Fred. We know that the inflation that is causing at the root of most of this is inflation at a 40-year high. You go to the grocery store, it's you and your wife. Imagine going to the grocery store and it's you and your wife and four children. Because, you know, that exists on top of the gas.
I understand.
Yeah. And Fred, these things are devastating. And then there's nowhere for people to turn, Fred. There's the safety net that used to exist.
The safety net may be unraveling, but it hasn't fallen apart yet. I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I'll just be honest with you. You know, I think that things can be done on the local level, you know, to try to stem the tide. And I think they are being done. It's difficult. It's not going to be easy. And it's going to be prolonged. You know, we're not going to pull out of this. We're going into a recession. We just have to be honest and deal with it that way.
Right.
And the question now becomes, how do we prepare for that? And it's a very complicated situation, Errol. I don't have an easy answer for it. All I know is that it exists, and we have to work together to try to uplift those folk who are struggling.
So Fred, you're
for example, you know, living here in North Carolina for the last 7 years. You know, I find that the political situations here are similar to Wisconsin. You know, you have a Democratic governor, you have a state house full of Republicans and conservatives, and then you have folks, you know, jockeying for position on the local level. You have a black mayor here, as you do now in Milwaukee. That's a difference. But will it make a difference? We'll have to wait and see. So, you know, yeah, man, things are like the old Temptations song, ball of confusion.
So Fred.
That's what the world is today.
So, Fred,
hey.
What I'm saying is you're a former alderman, so you understand city government. You know the resources that it takes to run city government. You knew at the time when you were an alderman in the city of Milwaukee, there were many more resources than there are now because there were many more corporations that paid taxes that made sure that, you know, a lot of things that city government is responsible for could happen. But we live in a city right now, like many others, that is stretched to the limit and is not going to be able to even produce what is necessary and what city government was always there for. And so the suffering of, and we talk about the safety net. Well, the safety net is nowhere near what it was. And at a time when there are more people struggling, I'm just talking about the city where I live now. And you being able to understand that because, again, you were in city government and knew the resources that were there as opposed to the resources that are here now. We're struggling right now wondering whether or not they're going to be able to even make sure that there are people to pick up the garbage. And because there aren't the resources there, because we have a state government that is not willing to give the fair share of the resources back to the city.
That's been the case for years, Earl. That was the case when I was on the city council. The budget for city services is certainly important. It's critical to how the city runs. Now, if city services are going to be affected, then we've got real issues. I've not heard of city services being affected to the extreme at this point. So I'm willing to wait to see what happens on that. But no, the situation with the state, that's always been there. It was there when Tom Barrett was mayor. It was there before Tom Barrett. So do I think that's going to change because of Kevler Johnson being the mayor? I don't know. I don't want to be pessimistic because it's easy to be pessimistic. So I'll just wait and see how it develops. But you know, the conditions in the city of Milwaukee right now, from what I understand, are developing quite well. My wife just got back from Milwaukee, and, you know, she hadn't been there in a few years, and she marveled, you know, at what's been going on, certainly in the downtown area.
So,
but, you know, like most central city neighborhoods in most central cities, the central city neighborhoods are suffering.
You know, Fred.
And they will continue to suffer.
You know, Fred, I mean, I'm here every day and I know and I've seen the changes because I'm here every day. I haven't gone anywhere in the last 7 years. And when I look at 109 murders as opposed to the records over the last 2 years, 79 at this time, and see the despair in this city. And especially in the areas of the city where I live, it's hard to be optimistic, you know. And
it is. I understand, brother. It is very hard. It's always been hard to live in Milwaukee County. It's always been hard to live in Milwaukee, particularly if you are of African American descent. And that harshness has not abated. It unfortunately continues. And addressing it is going to be as problematic as it ever has.
And you know what, Fred? I know it's not just Milwaukee. We know it's urban centers across the nation. And that's the issue. Got to go to a break. Hold on. 844-967-2789 is the number. On the line, Fred Gordon, Alderman Fred Gordon. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number on the line. Attorney Fred Gordon, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Fred, let's talk a little bit about Ukraine and what is taking place right now. Let's talk about NATO and I know that there are many in this country who aren't aware of NATO, what it really is. We've heard about it, you know, but it hasn't been something that we have had to focus on at all since its inception. But when you start and do a little research about Ukraine and Russia and NATO, and you start seeing that our country has already invested $60 to $70 billion in this war between NATO and Russia that's been going on since, in many instances, 2002, 2014. It's been going on a long time. And so what Americans have seen is an escalation between what's been happening with Ukraine and Russia, and many may not be aware of the fact that all of that used to be territory of USSR. And so, you know, those people have been freed once the USSR was dismantled. They were freed, and the USSR, or Russia, which came from the USSR, decided that maybe it's time that we reclaim some of our territory. At the same time, America has been building relationships with those areas that were once the USSRs. And, you know, we don't live in that area, but yet we are building alliances. And so Russia is perturbed about that. And so they're pushing back against that. But, you know, Americans may not know the history. What's your thought about the fact that we are getting ready to continue to get deeper and deeper into this and invest more and more treasure? And you hear Americans saying, well, look at what they're doing to those people. It's not right. When all over the world, Fred, those kind of things are going on and we're not there.
Well, geopolitics, they're very interesting from the standpoint that, as you've laid out, Earl, the interconnectedness between these issues, again, brings back my analogy about the ball of confusion. And, you know, Norway and Sweden are now part of the alliance for NATO, and that is supposed to upset Putin.
As well as it should.
Putin understands power, and for him it's all about seizing as much power as possible. And you know, we've dealt with Putin's before. Remember back in the 60s, Nikita Khrushchev, when he said to America that we will bury you.
Yes,
you know, I remember that vividly. So as a result, you know, Putin is upset, and Ukraine, for all the support that it's getting from around the world, and certainly from the U.S., is disheartening to me, because those resources are going to an area that, aside from wheat and, you know, some other commodities, doesn't really have an impact on our daily lives as Americans. Yet we have the support there because they're being attacked. And I think a lot of people thought that this would subside over time, but I don't think that's going to be the case personally. This is a protracted struggle because it's about power and land. And as the old African axiom states, land gives life. And Putin has always wanted to take land back that he thought shouldn't have been taken from his homeland, which is Russia. So that's why he was in Syria. This is Putin's plan. And he and other despots like Kim Jong in Korea you know, they understand that to flex and to make sure that power continues to be accumulated at whatever risk, because the U.S. is not going to do anything more than send resources there. But those resources, by and large, are going to waste. And that's the troubling part that I have. That's what's disheartening to me about what's happening in Ukraine, because we have our crises here that we can't really address as strongly as we should, because we're sending millions and billions to Ukraine.
You know, Fred,
it's a real source of consternation for me.
You know, Fred, when and I know that what I'm saying is not popular to say, but facts are facts. And you remember when the Cuban Missile Crisis? There was. We were ready to go to war, nuclear war, because of Russia placing those missiles on the soil, Cuba, so close to America. So here we are, you know, with NATO, that really NATO is nothing without the United States, Fred. We are really NATO.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we have.
That's why Trump wanted to get rid of NATO. You know, see, the anti-NATO animus really got strong when Trump was in office.
That is correct.
Because he didn't want to have anything with NATO.
Because
NATO was now.
Go ahead.
NATO was now hanging on by a thread when Trump was there. Now Trump's gone. Biden, who was supposed to be the foreign affairs guy. He was the foreign affairs guru during his senatorial career. He knew more about foreign affairs than anybody.
Right.
And, you know, I keep thinking about those years when he was the guy and why I haven't really seen anything like that since then. And it's primarily Earl because he's just so old.
So Fred, because we're going to get into Biden, but I wanted to finish this up quickly about NATO. And so we've created that buffer. We are going to make sure that Europe is safe. We, the United States of America, meaning the American citizens, are going to make sacrifices to make sure that those things happen. And I think when you keep asking the American citizens to make sacrifices, they should know what is happening in our name. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If you asked us to make sacrifices for NATO and for what's happening there, then the American people need to really be made aware of what we are doing and what sacrifices you are making. And if you really understood why you're making the sacrifices, then maybe you would say, okay, I get that. But when you find out that all of these sacrifices that are being made, all of the money that's being invested and spent militarily, and all those weapons, Fred, are going to have to be replaced with newer weapons, and they're going to increase the military spending budget at the expense of the American people, I think the American people
and
need
they don't
a better
have enough people in Ukraine to even fire the weapons.
Right.
That's what's
right.
So catastrophic about it.
Hey, Fred, can you hang
They're
on?
They're sending
me
all these sophisticated weaponry. Sure.
Hey, all right, hang on. We got to go to a break. On the line, Fred Gordon. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789.
Baby, you can drive my car.